I'm here in the town hall in Tulla, and I'm talking to Billy Leonard. Billy, quite a lot of different subjects to touch on, but can I start by asking you a little bit about your background? Your people, where do they come from?
Well, I was born in Cartubber, outside Carrick and Shannon in Roscommon. My father was working in CIE in Carrick and Shannon at that time. And he married my mother, who was from Roscommon. So that was the connection there. Subsequent to that, we moved around the country. I lived in Mullingar, at Lawn, and finally they settled in Waterford.
Was that because of your father's involvement with CIE?
With CIE,
yeah.
Yes.
And he was restationed in...
Indeed, yes. And they're still alive. They're in their mid-80s now. Both of them keep them very well. My father still plays golf. So,
he'd be an interesting man to meet.
Indeed. He played minor football. Yeah. He's from Meath.
Yeah.
He played minor football for Meath, and he knew a lot of the very famous Meath footballers. Paddy O'Brien, I remember one of them, and I say he's kept a diary all his life. He kept a diary during the war, listening to the BBC and keeping progress, a record of progress of the war.
That was unusual because there wasn't too much information coming in.
No, and he had a fairly comprehensive, beautiful writer. He could do the old, remember the Independent heading, the old Irish script writing that was on that? He was able to do that freehand. When we were in Mullingar, anybody making their communion or confirmation, they usually got a prayer book for the occasion, and he'd always write their name and the date on it in this beautiful script that he was able to do. Unfortunately, I didn't get it now, but he was and still writes copperplate.
And he's but his knowledge of the emergency period is all documented.
He has his own diaries kept, and he often refers to that he got an education from the VEC in Carlinstown in Meath, and it was the first time that a school under the VEC Act of 1930 was opened in Meath, and they were full of enthusiasm and the brave new world that state education without religious being involved, and they were out to prove themselves. So he got a most wonderful education. When they studied nature, they went out to the fields, to learn. And he instilled a love of nature in me. I wouldn't have the same detailed knowledge that he had, but he obviously got a meaningful education. Mm-hmm. And that now it probably went down since that time, but initially there was great enthusiasm there and in the VEC system.
That stood to you.
Absolutely. And my mother then came from Roscommon. She came from a place called Clonyquin, which is where Percy French lived. The Percy French house was only up the road from where she lived.
Her maiden name was?
Devanny. Yeah. And she has a sister still alive and herself alive. And my uncle then, he was very good at music. I can remember back in the 50s, he had a band that would be playing what was modern music, I suppose, in the 50s, and practicing in my grandmother's house, And that was a house now that had one bedroom that side, another bedroom that side, and the kitchen living area.
The traditional Irish cottage.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. There was no toilet, no running water. And I could keep talking about this now for a long while.
I'm fascinated by the way of life that those people had.
I was very lucky that I lived through that era, and there was six in my family, and my mother had, we're all closely spaced. So myself and my brother next to me, I was the oldest in the family, used to go to Roscommon, up to the farm. Every summer, she'd ship us off, and it was the most marvelous experience. I still have vivid memories of that time and working on the farm. And as I say, it was just on the, cusp of major changes in rural Ireland that time. We got some of the old field for stuff, I was saying to someone recently, my grandmother and myself used to listen to the radio. We'd listen to Mrs. Dale's Diary and The Archers were two of our favourite programmes. Anyway, and I still have a love of the radio. I prefer the radio. Anyway, maybe that's enough of the
No,
background.
so your own education there. You were it was
Yeah,
kind of,
my
you
own
jumped from
education,
place to
Dan.
place,
We
I
did.
suppose.
Really, Mullingar was the first place. Went to the nuns for a while and then the Christian Brothers. And we had a couple of reunions recently, at the school in Mullingar. But what was unique about it was that it was a reunion of primary school, not secondary school. It wasn't the class of 68 or 60, whatever. This was going back to the 50s when we were. And we had two very successful reunions, spaced 5 years apart over the last sort of 10 years. And I renewed a friendship that I had with her back then. We played golf once a week together. And but it's gone back to that time. Both of us left Mullingar at the same time.
Well, it's
And
lovely to kind of reminisce and to find out where those people went to now and what
Oh,
they're doing.
it's fantastic. In fact, of the whole class, the first time that we met, I think there was only one person died. And then between the two, the 5 year gap that we had, there was three died. A lot of them actually stayed in Mullingar. A lot of the class stayed there. I went to school not long. In fact, I think one of the chaps you were interviewing, Eamon Cunningham, and myself were in the same class
Is that right?
back in the
My.
60s. Yeah, and we worked
And
together
you wound up working
subsequently.
together.
Yes. And we retired within a month of one another as well. But it was one of the things about moving around that this kept coming back at me all over the years that I'd meet someone from Mullingar, Athlone, Waterford. There was disadvantages. We had no roots that, if you're in the one place all your life and your relations are scattered, you don't have that. But it's more than compensated for by the fact of bumping into people. Such marvelous experiences now. But anyway, one of the unique things about when I was being educated, I ended up for 2 years in Tremor, in the Christian Brothers down there in Waterford. The class that I finished there was in the Leaving Cert in 1964, and I was the only one doing it. The only one in the Brothers School doing the Leaving Cert that year. And a couple of years afterwards, the secondary part of the school closed down, which is amazing. It's
Now,
a,
why were you
yeah,
the only one doing the
because,
Leaving
well,
Cert?
there was four of us started off in fifth year, and for one reason or another, the other three dropped out, and I was left. Now, I had to sit in with the girls, the local girls, to do the Leaving Cert because they weren't going to give me the facilities of, a supervisor and all the rest of it just for one person. But it's a reflection, I'd say, on Irish society, the way things have developed there, that,
And that would have been in the kind
that
of
was
in
1964, you say,
1964.
four, yes. And that was just before the economy took off, that it was, the population of Tremor would have stayed static at around 1,000 people that time. And a lot of the development that happened was in Waterford City. So the students then had to go in, my brothers had to go into Waterford, into the Devil's Isle and the Christian Brothers schools in there. And now the population of Tremor is 10,000. There's a couple of secondary schools down there.
I
It's
know,
a
it's
real
intensive.
reflection of what,
Different,
you know,
but being the only lad, were you did you get special
not
treatment?
really, because a lot of the teachers then were really primary school teachers, and a lot of it I had to do myself. The only good teacher I had was he taught me Latin, and he was learning it as the two of us used to argue with one another. He was learning it as well. I could nearly speak Latin when I left, and I got 95% in the honours at the time, and that was special treatment. But the other stuff, it was more or less on your own,
Did you find Latin a good subject
Yes.
to learn?
Yes, and I loved it at the time. Now I'd love to get back to it. You do forget it, but this book
But
actually came out last year. I'm all a mass I didn't see it now, and it's
no.
for yeah.
But why? Why?
Well, in later life, we'd say even the construction of words, English words, and that. I love doing crosswords now. Do the two crosswords in the Times every day. A lot of that I put down to my experience from words that came from the Latin. The construction of words. And I remember the very first Latin lesson I had in Mullingar. The teacher taking the word satisfaction and breaking it down into satis, enough, the Latin word for enough, and facio to make, make enough satis. I remember that stuck in my head. That was fantastic. It was like Saint Paul on the road to Damascus getting this, and it has remained with me since.
But it was the mensam and all, that it was easy enough to learn, but it seemed
Well,
to.
you see, one of the things, Dan, and you might remember yourself, was that if you were a Catholic, you went to Mass, and the Mass was in Latin. So, and now I didn't serve Mass, but I'd have, like everybody had a missal, and you were reading it in Latin. So there was a lot of Latin around at the time. In fact, the school in Mullingar, the secondary school, was known as the Latin school. The that was the brothers' school, was that's what it was known as, Latin school. So
But you got a good leaving out of it.
I did, yeah. As I say, I didn't do honors maths now, but because there was no one to teach me, but I got a sufficiently high mark in the pass, yeah.
But you spent a lot of time, you spent most of your life then
In Dublin,
in
then,
Dublin, didn't
yes,
you?
yeah.
Why did you make that decision?
Well, decision is hard. I was 17 when I came to Dublin, so decision might be too big a word for it.
It was out of necessity, was
It
it?
was, yeah. There weren't many jobs around the place. My mother actually sent in the application form, got me to sign it. And but an interesting thing, again, because things were changing that time. It was the corporation. I went to Dublin Corporation. And I applied for it, and there was a panel of 200, and I was 54th on that panel. And it came out sometime in September, and I started working in January 65. I had to wait until January 65 to get the job. I was 54 out of 200. Another 3 years after that, a friend of mine that's I'm still very friendly with, was in the region of 600 out of a panel of 2,000 or thereabouts. And he was called before Christmas. So what happened there was jobs after being created, probably more places at university. And the result of that was that people didn't go into these jobs that, in my time, were precious jobs.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely precious to get. So, and that was just the time that the 5-year plans that Whitaker was bringing in were starting to bite, and Lammas was getting the country
Back on his feet.
right back on its feet.
Back, yes. Well, you were a
So,
young lad
sorry, I
here
was
then at the
17, I
time.
was only a
Yes.
child at the time.
What were you doing when you came
And
into
when I,
to Dublin
now,
City
yeah, Dublin
Authority?
City that time, Ireland is a small country. My father was operating manager in Waterford at the time, and the personnel manager down there was from Dublin. And he asked me, where would I like to go when he heard I got the corporation? So I said, I'd like to go to finance anything, money, figures, that. So he had a friend in Dublin Corporation. So I came up and walked into the finance section. At the time there, I can still remember them all vividly. The first boss I had was a man called Sean Haughey, who was Charlie's brother. He used to be talking about Cahill. I don't know who he was talking about, but Cahill is what he used to call him. And I worked for him for a year or so. And quite an enriching experience for a young lad to have. I often think about the advice, some of the advice he gave me was one thing that stood to me. He gave me a job to do, and I was finished the job and finished it before he was ready to give me another job. And he came up, he used to call me Willie. And he'd say, "No, Willie," he'd say, "if you're not busy, look busy." That stayed with me, a tough man, but very fair and very, very nice to work for. That was the finance department at the time, and in that section, they used to look after the salaries and make payments then for all sorts of things. But one of the interesting areas that I ended up working in there was the library's account. And I
Why
met
was that now?
because there was, again, changeover, and there was a lot of the older staff still around that time. And I used to have, to deal with people that were ordering the books, and I'd have to make the payments for the books. And I was doing, within a couple of years, doing the full annual account for it. So I was in touch with them. I remember somebody always referred to them as Miss Creighton and Miss McGrath, who was a lovely old lady. Never met her, just knew her over the phone, and but a wonderful experience, absolutely wonderful.
Was it very much the old school
Oh,
staff?
very much. And I there was some other, like, I'm going to be jumping a little bit now along that period, but one of the jobs I had to do was go up to the abattoir and check the books up there. The city owned the abattoir at that time. It was up beside the cattle market, and it was corporation staff that ran it. But they had a set of books up there where they took in money for lairage. They would keep cattle in overnight and feed them hay, and before they were slaughtered. So whoever owned the cat had to pay money for that sort of service, and there's a few other things that they had to pay for. But there was a man there in my time, Murphy was his name, and he ran that place like a concentration camp. It was like literally a concentration, it
Yes, it's
was slaughter going on, but he was a martinet, and people were afraid of him. But for some reason or other, I got the inside track on him, and he was the most interesting man. But he wonderful writer. And I saw a memo of his, and one of the words he used, I remember, it's again, it stuck with Grad Grindian. Marvelous word. Grad Grind was a character in one of Dickens's books, I think Hard Times. And all that man wanted was the facts, the facts. You might remember from your reading, Gradgrind, but he made up his own word, Gradgrindian. They were wonderful, wonderful stuff. But again, that was a relic of the old decency that was there, and people that were a couple of levels up were important people, because promotions during the 50s and early 60s were very rare. And with the result that you had a lot of people at, we'd say, a clerical officer level and that, who were in the job for 30 years maybe and didn't get promoted. You had quite a lot of that then, but lots of interesting characters, lots of,
Was there always that fear of getting stuck then in a position
Well,
and not getting out of it?
I'd say that happened quite a lot of people. Now, when I came in again, it was just on the edge, you see. I'd stayed for a couple of years, we'd say. That was the case, but after that it changed, and promotion became more rapid. Like, I was there 5 years and I got promoted. When I came in 65, there were people there for 20 years and they never got promoted, So
But you were stint your time in the library. How many years were
well,
you there?
it wasn't. It was in the accounts part.
The accounts part of the
after,
library.
No, of the corporation that looked after the accounts. The libraries themselves didn't make the payments. They had to be done by the finance department. Where
oh, but
I
it was.
Was
your responsibility, though.
But that was and I had to deal with them, and they would send up stuff to me, as I said, to have paid, and reams and reams of invoices. You know, it was quite a busy. Yeah.
In fact, you were taking on quite a bit there, were you?
Oh, very much now. That was a bit ahead of my time, because the guy that was doing it was delighted to
let you do it. Okay, go through all those payments. You were paying salaries. You were paying.
Well, we wouldn't have done the salary. It'd be more, we'd say, bookbinding. Then all of the book suppliers, like I remember Brown Thomas's, we'd say, you know, the Educational Company of Ireland were supplying some books. All of the book suppliers, all of the invoices would end up with me. And there'd be thousands of books to be paid for, you know. So, but then at the end of the year, we had to do the annual account, which involves income expenditure. And I had no training now in accounts, but you had to do it. Income expenditure, balance sheet, and capital account. And they all had to be done by a clerical officer. Now, if you're getting it, and if you were doing that nowadays, do an account for somebody. You know,
but surely you'd have to have accountancy practice. Or
None at all. It was all clerking. And I remember the city accountant at the time, it was Brennan was his name. He was an accountant. He brought me in one day and explained the intricacies of the double entry system. And that. But, you know, it was... you learned it, and there was once you got the insight into where things went and the books, it was okay then, you know, and you had plenty of guidance on that, but you were in fact left to yourself to do it.
But that stood to you, know. Didn't it?
Absolutely.
When you got involved in the credit.
That's right,
that.
Totally, yes.
But before we even get there, take me through the next stage of your time.
They were just in between, because that's a very interesting time there that I had at the start. One of the other places I had to go was the swimming pools or bathhouses or that time. The one in that was subsequently Markievicz swimming pool, which was down at Tara Street. But it had a wash house attached to it.
A wash house,
which now that was where the local women, and it was all women then, would come in and do their washing. There was no launderettes that time. They wouldn't have had washing machines. They couldn't afford washing machines at home. So they were given the facilities here of a washing board, soap, and a big vat then for doing the washing. And my job and how I ended up there was that the corporation used to sell them the soap. That was the only money transaction. I think it was 5 LP for a bar of this probably sunlight red soap or something. The man in charge of that area was a man called Frank Scanlon. He was the superintendent of the baths. So great man, very interesting man. But I remember asking him one day, I told this at my retirement because it's one of a vivid memory. I asked, do you mind bringing me into the wash house? He said, I see the whole transaction of what's going on inside. So he brought me in, and the hubbub and the noise, and it was unbelievable now, you know. And one woman caught my eye when she was doing her washing, and I remember I was only this snotty, you know, 17-year-old from the country, and she let her off, and she said, young fella, do you want to see me knickers, you see? And and she lifted a pair of pants. I ran out of it because all the rest of them were beginning to turn on me. anyway,
but was that the way?
That was again a relic that was left there. There was a couple of those washhouses around the place. That was the only one that I had experience of now, and that area would have been corporation estates around the place then,
What
but
year?
that was 65, 65,
We were really on
Oh, yeah, totally. It was
between
fantastic. Yeah,
the
that's
dark
right.
ages
That's
and
right.
coming
That's
into
right. Yeah,
the
it was wonderful, wonderful.
yeah.
And
Great experience, wasn't it?
wonderful. Now, Frank himself was a very interesting man, but one of the things that he was interested in astronomy. And he used to make his own telescopes back then, that time. He'd grind out the lenses and the mirrors and that, gave me a very lifelong interest in astronomy. Now, not that I went into it deeply, but I was always interested in. But that's where it sprung from, was,
It was with the
was this
knowing and meeting.
meeting the likes of, well, that man Frank particularly, and
Where did he
well, he
live?
just seemed to pick it up. It was something he was interested in, but he was
Well, it was a
deep.
hobby.
Thought it was a hobby with him,
Yeah.
and he had a willing listener to me because I remember I saw 1957. There were two things happened: the Aaron Rowland comet stayed in the sky for a whole week or so, or more maybe, and it had a beautiful tail. There was no looking for it; it was there, presented to you. And that was the year the Sputnik went up, and I saw that as well that year. So he had a willing accomplice, myself. Yeah. The other thing that time, I should mention this because it's something you forget now. I was fairly, we'd say, lonely that time when I came up at 17. I wouldn't have known anybody, and the people that I would have known in Waterford didn't come up to Dublin. Very strange, I was the only one out of a class, of maybe three different classes that came up to Dublin because they got employment locally in Waterford City, particularly in the Waterford Glass Factory. So I was the only one came up. So consequently, you're very much on your own. And whether he was a boss, we'd call him, in the accounts where I started working, a man called Fox was his name, Jimmy Fox, but he was a Dublin man. And I remember him coming up to Christmas and he was saying, "I love Christmas Day," he'd say, "because I know when I walk down Grafton Street on Christmas Day, every person I meet is a Dublin person." Now, there was a little bit of that Dublin, the Jack Hayne country thing going on. But I remember that hurting, I remember, now later on I wouldn't give a curse, but that time it was a very insensitive thing to say, to a young lad starting off.
Did
And then
you find a flat or did you find
I
some
did. I found digs first. That man that was down with, that worked with my father actually found digs for me, and out in Santry. And funny thing, I used to get the bus in from Santry back in '65, and the traffic was just as bad then as it is now. I remember coming down Dorset Street, and into Parnell Square, and the traffic would be all the way from Dorset Street over to Dame Street, backed up all the way through O'Connell Street. So this traffic
Great.
business is not a new phenomenon. So it's very bad back then as well. Anyway, one of the other places that I worked for a year, I had to go to, was the voters registration department. And there was a man ran that, a man called Liam Dooley. He was a small man, but a military man. He was a captain in the FCA. And he ran the place like a military institute, but very nice to work for. There was no, and everybody knew their job, and he'd give out his
What was going
command.
on there?
That was where we produced the register of electors every year. It had to be done every year. The local authorities would produce the register, and big undertaking. Dublin City was a very big place then, and why I bring it up to, there's a couple of little things about it. We did all the printing ourselves. We had equipment there, We had an old Xerox machine that took a photograph, for want of a better word, of pages that had the names on them. And we developed them. We had, I don't know what it was, black kind of, I don't know how, it was electrical process anyway that ended up with master copies from the photographic machine. It was then put on a Gestetner type machine and printed off. So it was all done. But what was interesting was the man that was in charge of it, of the section, that army man, used to strip the Gestetner machine. Now, I'm not joking here, like it would have been from there to there, that length, you know,
About
where you
6 feet.
feed it in, and
Yeah.
he'd strip it down every year because there was a quiet period during the summer. All the bits out on the floor, every single bit, he'd clean it off and put it all together again. Wonderful. And he used to do the same with his car. He was that
It's
man.
kind of hard to
Oh,
comprehend
yeah.
now when you think of computers today
That's
and
right.
what you had then.
Absolutely. It was fantastic. And
But
he,
this Xerox machine, you still had
yeah.
to do a lot of typing, didn't you?
Well, we had three or four typists at the time as well. But the other thing that we had, which was very interesting, was there was a fleet, not a, there was a group of men that were employed every year to do proofreading and to go out and collect the names. And these were retired people. They were old people. They were people that had fought in 1916 or 1922 that would have fallen on hard times, maybe. I remember one fellow, his name was White. He had played soccer for Ireland. And this is what he ended up doing, you know. Yeah, sorry.
Sorry.
Nice to tell you, you know.
But Billy, this man obviously played a big part in your
Oh,
life.
he was most wonderful.
And I suppose that
Yeah.
experience too stood to you, with the when you came into the county council leaders,
That's
the
right.
whole
That's right.
change
That's
in.
right. That's right. It was another just another thing about him. He was very interesting, man. In the army, his expertise was ballistics, and the regular, even he was in the FCA. The regular army used to have him in for consultations, and you know, he was a bit of a brain. There's another thing that I'd like to just mention. Again, it's great to have an opportunity to put it down as a permanent record. The City Accountants was the name of that department I worked in, looking after the finance. And the most coveted job in it for a clerical officer was to assist the man that was looking after stocks and loans. Stocks, yeah, stocks, what the stocks? But the corporation, up to 1956, used to issue stocks and people would buy them on the stock exchange. 1956 was the last time they had one of those issues. But this man, Jack Kelleher was his name, a bit of a genius, mathematical genius. He died last year, but I stayed friendly with him from the mid-60s up until his death. He'd often say to me, Billy, he'd say, you weren't the brightest young fella I had, but you were the nicest. And he was like that. He'd say directly out to you, you know, what he was thinking and that. But the intolerance of genius. But by the same token, I found him easy to get on with. Now, that time, we had ledgers with all the records of the stocks, and they had to be kept in pen. We had the old inkwell with a sloping desk, and we'd put these big letters on it and dip the old nib into the inkwell and write up the ledgers. He would not tolerate biros, anything. It had got to be done in ink. And there's very few people would have known about that. This was, as I say, a very coveted position to get because invariably, when you went for interview, you were asked about stocks and loans because it was an area that people, it was, what's the word, arcane is not the word, but it was kind of like the Knights Templars. It was a secret sort of a thing that was going on. And and you had to have a bit of an aptitude, all right, for figures. But the bit about the ink was fantastic. Again, moving from, an old thing that was going on from Dickensian times, I'd imagine, just before the computer started to have an effect.
From the pen and ink to the computer.
Yeah.
But that man, that
Yes, yeah.
he had he ran
Oh,
that
he was,
show.
yeah. In fact, you talk about corruption later on, but he used to swear as to secrecy. We also had loans as well. Loans that were generally got from the Commissioner of Public Works for housing, sewerage works, water works. That's what the loans, and they were big loans. But one of the loans that was raised came from the one of the unions, I don't know, Transport and General Works, I don't know what they were called at the time, but there was a clause in it that it could be called in at any time by the trade union. But what it actually meant was that the corporation had this as a cheap loan. They had it for gone for quite a while. And all he had to do was tell somebody in the union, look at, would you, for God's sake, look to have that money taken back because it's at an interest rate that's ridiculous. It would have been that simple sentence to tell somebody would have been worth thousands, to and that, but he wouldn't. Corporation first, duty first, there was no
Was that the
question
all
of
important thing? You're just,
absolutely,
yeah.
absolutely. And there were so many people like that. Even that man, well, now we're mentioning names, just better, Sean Haughey, as I was saying, one of the straightest people I ever came across. And all the things that came out subsequently about his brother, I couldn't believe it. And I'd say he was shocked and horrified as well. I'd say, that he was so straight, so honest, that it must have come as quite a shock. I used to babysit for him as well, back then.
Yeah, but yeah, but these characters are all
I
important.
remember, I'll just give you a little story about, we talk about characters now, and that place in the City of Camptons I worked, one of the things we had to do there was compile all the figures for the cost of the motor tax area. And then we were recoup that money. But it was our section's responsibility to collate all that and then make the claim. Was a very sizable one. And what was important about it was that it was all recoupable, so all the expense had. And there was a gentleman that worked in the motor tax that used to come down to ensure we were on the right track, and Johnny Byrne was his name. But Johnny had a weakness for drink, and he had a lot of character flaws, shall we say, but a very funny character. And he was, again, something, a relic from the past. He was able to do something that I never saw anybody else do it. These ledgers that we had were huge, big ledgers. You can imagine for that sort of thing. Lines down this way, and then analysed across here. He could run that down, run a top down that way, just looking at it and come up with the answer and do the same across here in his head. And he was always right.
Without
Without
calculator.
anything. He could run down, as I'm doing to you there, with his finger down the hallway, put in, and then run across here and right every time.
My
Every time.
goodness, yeah.
Yeah. But as I say, the weakness for John. I remember one story about him. His wife left him because of the drink and all that, and he was living by himself, and he wasn't really looking after himself too well. He was bringing clothes to Imco or Prescott. I don't know if you remember them or not. The old dry cleaners, and he was leaving in a trousers. You see, and there was some young one, obviously after starting, and she was looking at the trousers, and she says, "Is that oil in the trousers?" And Johnny says, "If that's oil, I'm in business."
So quick-witted as well.
Oh yeah, it's marvelous. If a time, a
Great
lot of these
brain.
things would come back to me,
Yeah.
that And I'm sorry for spending so much time that,
No,
but that's an
it's a
era
very interesting era. Yeah, it's long forgotten about now, because we've
yes,
moved on.
that's
So
right,
it's
that's
important
right.
to
Yeah,
document and to
yeah.
remember these
It
events.
was I remember I was talking there last week to some lady, and I was just saying back then I started on say £400 a year. I was a target officer's, gone up by increments to £1,000 a year. And it took 20 years to get from 400 up to 1,000. But if you got married, you got £125 extra, as long as you were a maid. If a female got married, she had to leave. Now, she got a marriage gratuity, as they used to say, but it was very much a male-dominated play. There was no females beyond a certain level because of the marriage bar, that they had to leave. And it was a different world, different world. And this particular lady, she couldn't believe, what? They had to leave. Had to leave. Yeah, that was the rule at the time in the public service, that they couldn't stay on. And that a married man got the £125, which was a sizable lump of money that time. 125, so it was total discrimination. Everything was wrong about it, looking at it from, through today's eyes.
Moving from the department that you worked in at the beginning, where did you go to?
After that, then I'd say after 5 years, I got promoted, which was, quite an achievement, I suppose. But it was beginning to loosen up the whole system, and there were opportunities. The local authorities were expanding and giving more jobs to do. Planning was after exploding at the time, and that. So it was after 5 years, and I got promoted. The grade used to be Class A, it was called then, and I remember that man Jack Keller explained to me, but I couldn't where the name came from,
No, you're okay. It's just.
And I went to the roads department up in Christchurch Place. An interesting thing is that where I worked in the City of Camptons was in Lord Edward Street. That building is now a hotel. Then I was moved up to Christchurch Place, where the roads department, the paving department as it was known then, it's now a hotel as well. So two of the buildings that I worked in the corporation are now hotels. The original buildings are converted, and one of them has gone altogether. The paving department was there for 5 years. Now, I don't know whether, again, at that stage, computers were beginning to make an impact. For me, it was very interesting in that I had lots of contact with lads in depots. We were doing costing, as it was called that time. All the jobs that were being done by the roads department had to be costed through materials, labour, all that sort of thing. And the section that I worked in, that was our job, to
Well, you were, I suppose, at some stage you were going to get married,
that. Well, that's it, you see. And
and
for up to that, again, because I was so young, that I would have been, I suppose, very shy. I was saying to you, the first couple of years, I wouldn't have known anybody. But then gradually began to put the roots down. And when I got promoted, it wouldn't happen nowadays. I doubled my salary. I had money coming out of every pocket, and it was a marvelous experience. I had a brother going to university who was dying to spend that money. And I suppose sex, drugs, and rock and roll took over then for a couple of years. Great time, really. It was the end of the 60s and the beginning of the 70s. I'm not too sure that we'd put down exactly what we did, but it was.
What was going on in the council at the time?
At the time, again, as I say, I was in the it was the corporation still now, and I worked in the roads department. planning, I suppose, and housing would still, they would have been the big areas. We had some work to do on some of the outlying areas. Only years later that it would have made sense to me, some of the names that were subsequently developed, but we wouldn't really have had any dealings. It was mostly maintenance area that I was involved in the roads. One of the interesting things that I had then was ordering what were called emoluments for the men. And emoluments were payments that were made, or in-kind payments, that were added to a person's salary for their pension purposes. That's what an emolument was. You might have heard the word, but that's effectively what it was. And the emoluments for the general operatives, the labourers, was a serge pair of trousers and a pair of shoes or boots. And they got these every 6 months. Now, it was a big contract for a company to get. Remember Ireland, John Ireland was the name of the company that did the serge trousers, we'd say, and the quays in Dublin. If you're ever up in Dublin, you went down the quays back in the 70s, you'd have seen this company called John Ireland. And I remember one fella, he was exceptional. He couldn't be in the normal order for shoes. I think his name was Bourne. And I had to order his specially. He had a size 13 shoe. And there's a crowd in Capel Street called Flitterman's that used to make, handmade shoes. And of course, I left that to the end. I mean, I had to get the big stuff out of the way. And he rang me one day and, Mr. Leonard, I'm coming in there to get my shoes. I said, I haven't got them ready. I'm coming in. He said, so he came in to me anyway, and he must have been 6 foot 7. And he was looking down at me, have you got me shoes? I said, I haven't got them. But we settled it all amicably anyway. I told him I'd have them within a week, But again, I don't know whether they're still doing emoluments, that in the corporation to, I'm sure they get protective clothing and all that kind of thing. But we used, that was the what we call them, emoluments, yeah. For a long time, it was a mystery, what the hell these things were. So anyway, that was
But your
just
responsibility then was looking after the
this, well, that was one of the things. It was a lot of little jobs that we had to do. One of them that were reinstatements, they were called. The gas company, the P&T as they were known then, ESB, they would want to lay a cable or dig up the road. And the cable might be going along, whatever, 100 metres, 100 yards, whatever. But they had to pay the corporation for that, to reinstate it back to what it was. That's where the word reinstatement came from. And I had big ledgers again, before computers came in, to keep records of all of these. And we had fellas called measurers who used to go out with a wheel thing, and wheel it down the length of the cutting. And they would give us the measurement back then in whatever it was, square meters or square yards. And we'd make up the bill, post it into this ledger, and we'd have instead of sending out a single invoice, we'd have, tear out a page out of this big ledger and send it off to the ESB, and they'd pay on the basis of that. Interesting
It
stuff, man.
was indeed, yes.
But yeah, it was one of those things that just it had to be done, and there was quite a sizable amount of money involved in it,
But what about
yeah.
The workers? Were they part-time? Were they
Oh, they
full-time?
would have been full time, and there was a marvelous tradition in the corporation that time. A lot of them, we were in an office up in Christchurch, and all of the papers used to come in from storekeepers, timekeepers. In fact, there was a lot of work, unnecessary work done that they would do a timesheet out to pay the men, but they would also do out a sheet for us with the hours broken down over the different jobs they were doing. So, like a driver could have been on 20 or 30 jobs in a week, and all the jobs he went on with the number of minutes or half hours were tabulated, brought into us. We bunched them all together, and they were, with some control totals on them, sent over to the punch cards in the computer section. They punched these up. My God, I had to think of, somebody going through all of that stuff. punched up into a system that then gave you back the costs of how much, we'd say, the maintenance on asphalt roads were for, the year or whatever, and the engineering charge at the
Did you
time.
find your work
I
interesting?
did, I did, I did, because I was dealing with the men out on the depots, the storekeepers, the timekeepers. They were wonderful men, the inspectors. They had a tradition. A lot of them would
What
have
kind of
started
tradition?
off, a lot of them would have started off as boys, messengers, bringing in stuff like that into us, grown up. And then sons, there would be a tradition of keeping the job in the family.
Family or
Yes,
father to son?
exactly. And generally, we'd say when that happened, these lads did well. Subsequently, they would have got a storekeeper job because, well, total dedication, first of all. It was their area. And
Where were
this
they
business
coming
of,
from? Were they coming up the country or were they coming?
no, a lot of them would have been Dublin people.
What parts of them?
Well, you see, there were depots that time all over the place, so they would have come from anywhere, like there was a depot out in Holt. Equally, there was a depot out in Crumlin. There was one in what's the name of the place down where the City Hall is now. There was a big one down there in the watching office, it used to be called as well. But they were all over the city, really. But that certainly was enriching. We were meeting real people and people that were doing a job, proud of their job. That's the thing that was, you'd often hear people giving out about the corporation and they're doing nothing in there. You couldn't say that to these men. They were working and working that bloody hard as well, and very proud of what they did. So, I used to think that it was quite a slur on these people, to say, oh, corporation never do that, it was very unfair to these,
But these, yes, of course, and it was a living, and like you said, you thought that they were a kind of
They were very
proud of their
proud.
work and that, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. They were.
But so working with the with in
Yes,
that field, you were.
well, a little bit of, as I say, that time I got promoted, I was happy. I was doing a job that I liked on a daily basis, and a lot of my activities were, as I say, I was very involved in the social club. In myself and a few other lads started a social club off in the corporation, and we were running dances, and as you were saying, we were getting more and more interested in women and the other side to life. So I got married then in 73.
That settled you down
That
a bit.
settled. And in 74, I came over here to the old county council,
When
and
did you get involved with the credit union?
well,
Was that
in
much later?
1980, yeah, it was 1980, 81.
Did
So
you start it off?
myself, there was around four or five of us. It was a kernel of for it that started it, and
Who were the other people involved?
now one of them was a man called Sean Carey. Sean ended up as assistant manager in the corporation. Joe Kennedy was another man. He was in charge of the computer section when I went to the computer section in the county. Tom Sheehan. In fact, Tom, the reason it started ostensibly was this man called Tom Sheehan needed a new car. Didn't want to go to the banks. So he had heard about credit unions. He did a lot of research now, and we always said that it was started to buy a new car for this man, Tom Sheehan. A good bit of truth in it as well, He
But you obviously, did you find a need for a credit union
well,
at?
my own reason for going was that I had gone looking for a loan to the bank for the kids were going to school, in September, and I was short of money, and I needed to get uniforms and school books, and I just didn't have them. And well, I nearly had to sell my soul to them.
It was difficult enough.
Oh, but nowadays to give money for any reason, but as I say, it was humiliating. So I vowed never to go again. And as soon as I heard that people were interested, I went in with a heart and a half then into setting up the credit union. And really, it was a very successful venture. Now, we had complete backing of the management, and any facilities we wanted, or they were 100%, which was nice to know that they were 100% behind us on it, And it was very satisfactory work as well. I didn't mind. I put hours and hours and hours of my own time into it, and I know my own finances were solid, and I'd say a lot of other people's are as well, because that was back in the 80s. Things were not as flahoolock then. People needed money.
Genuinely needed
Yes,
money.
And we sorted out a few people. Other people then, always have one or two, There was one fellow who was a weakness for a drink, and we weren't too sure what was going on with him, but he was putting in, say, £40 a fortnight. And he'd go in on Monday, and he'd be into us on the Wednesday, and he'd take 35 at least out. And I'm more interested in getting more of the 60s and that. And what he was at anyway was he was living with his mother, but subsequent to him dying, a woman with two children emerged out of the woodwork. And obviously, what he was doing was handing the check over, his money over, less the £40. She was only seeing the net amount, and then he was using the €30 to buy a drink for himself.
I imagine, yes.
Wasn't
But you'd get a lot of that.
the
And again, you were dealing with people and you
people
were dealing with their problems, and
exactly,
you were trying to sort their
absolutely,
problems out
absolutely,
financially. Yeah.
yeah.
But you got a lot of satisfaction
I
from
did,
doing that.
and there was a couple of little stories now, and I leave. The one lad came in one day, and he was looking for £100. And again, he looked a little bit, and I knew him anyway, and I knew that he was spending a lot of money on drink and that. Just, so I said, £100, is that all you want? I said, He said, yeah. And I said, what reason will I put down? And he said, I'm fucking starving, Billy.
Okay, that's lovely Dublin wit, isn't it? But
it was so great. Now, I mean, you get plenty of that as
could you
well.
write a
But
book on all those
oh,
little
I don't know. I
anecdotes?
could get my father maybe to do it, But
It's
it
brilliant,
was
really.
great. It was great, and it's still going strong. And we now have gone from being a totally voluntary one that we're employing people, and that's only in the last 3 or 4 years that we've got people. We all ran it as a voluntary organization. I'd say we were one of the very few left that were running it voluntarily. But it was like a child that we were after bringing into existence. The only other things now that I was going to talk a bit about the computer section in the corporation. We had a change over from the old cards, punch cards, to tapes, but we had punch cards, thousands, thousands and thousands of them, with equipment for sorting and merging, all that kind of thing. But maybe we'll leave that for another day.
Well, yeah, I must, it must, because, well, Benny Leonard, your story has been incredible, but we won't leave it here because I'm sure we'll do another recording as well.
Because
I
there's
would be interested in finding out more about that time in your life.
indeed,
Thanks,
indeed,
Billy.
and thanks very much,
Very much
Maurice.
indeed.
Enjoy that.
No, I can ask you then. It'll be interesting. When you were in charge of traffic, the parking meters, they were on their way in.
That's right. They came in that time when we were up in Christchurch Place, and they had two men going around for the city collecting the money in machines that were supposed to be sealed and not possible to break into them, which was fine. And that money would then go into a central area up in Christchurch Place every evening. It was weighed, first of all, that a huge weighing scales where all that money was thrown onto the weighing scales and weighed. And subsequent to that, then it was put into machines that was able to split them up into their denominations of tenpences and 50 pences, and bagged and lodged. But one of the young fellows that was working in the office suddenly was shown all the trappings of wealth. And he was driving a car which was bigger than the manager's car in the car park. They put the internal audit people onto him to see what the hell was going on. And it was quite simple. What he had discovered was that three of the old tenpences weighed the same as a 50 pence piece. So he started substituting my 50 pence pieces with 30 pences. And he made a fortune out of it. Made a fortune. Because all that was done was weighing it initially.
Yeah.
So as long as he was able to get at that before it went into the
But
machines.
wasn't that an ingenious, that he
Absolutely
managed to
brilliant.
find out?
Idiot.
Yeah.
If he had sort of kept it and, not show signs of wealth and
But he, and obviously he was spotted.
But one of the lads going around with the thing got some way. They never found out how he was able to break into the machine that they were emptying the thing. And again, it was ingenious the way the did it, the internal audit. I remember one fellow telling me from internal audit that he was at a street corner up near the Shelburne Hotel and in dark glasses, and he was watching the guy take and see could he see anything, He missed it. He didn't see anything, but they kept a graph of the takings, at particular areas where this guy, the suspected, and while he was away on holidays, the thing shot up and back down when he came on again. So they knew then that he was at something, and they eventually tackled him, and I think they got the guards in, raided his house, and he had money coming out of the walls. Tenpences
All
and
the cooperation's money.
that, yeah.
Very
But
good.
anyway, that
Yeah.
young fellow that cut him down to
Yeah.
the 50 pence, that was some catch on, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know.
And it was an
But
exact
the
ratio.
corporation must have
It was an exact ratio.
but did you employ somebody then to look after the money
Ah,
at that
well, they
stage, or?
tightened up. Now I'm not quite sure, but the between the weighing and the bagging of it, there was
Yeah.
no gap.
Yeah.
There wasn't room for anybody to,
It's very interesting.
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.